Welcome to The Connection, where humans and aliens converse, and where all the dots are connected. I'm Nancy of Zeta Talk, an emissary for aliens from Zeta Reticuli. They are here to warn of great cataclysms on Earth and advise how to survive this. The pending pole shift is not the end. Man will make his next leap forward to live a better time when aliens will live among us. There's constant talk on conspiracy message boards and websites about the Illuminati, the all-seeing eye, and other secret societies that run the world. Let's examine this theory in light of what the Zetas have reported. And let's examine this theory in light of the coming devastation the pole shift will bring. And I quote, "Puppet masters, he with the gold rules. The public assumes a broad ownership of corporations and media outlets when the opposite is true. Very few individuals control the wealth of the world, install politicians to their pleasing, create global conflicts, and create or destroy fortunes of countries as well as individuals in the chess games they play with their control, and thus operate as puppet masters. Their agenda is to retain control, retain their position, and thus, as their gold rules, they want minimal impact to their financial stature. No bank failures, no drop in stock value, no corporate bankruptcies. Puppets, promised wealth, power, security, and opportunities outside of what their natural talents would afford, puppets invariably allow their strings to be pulled. They are chosen because they can be controlled by blackmail, by bribery, by intimidation, and if disappointed with the role they are assigned, they are alternatively threatened and placated by their puppet masters, else eliminated. Puppets run amok of their masters when they sense their world will not continue and make demands. Occasional restless puppets are expected, with alternatives waiting in the wings, but when puppets panic en masse, malfunction, are absent, and many replacements are happening simultaneously, the chess game the puppet masters play does not go as planned." End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Clash of Agendas. One might equate the puppets with what Pink Floyd called the dogs on his album Animals. He's describing people without ethics, looking for the easy meat, and putting on a false front with an easy manner while looking for the kill.
Got to be able to pick out the easy meat.
Quoting again from Zeta Talk, the comfortable class. Accustomed to being secure due to ownership of goods and the power this brings, the upper class or moneyed class will react with more than shock when their property, whether corporate interests or stocks and bonds or real property, is flushed down the toilet during the increasing changes pummeling the earth. Insurance companies will go under when their insured base surpasses their wealth. Corporate bankruptcy will ensue when all but the corporate name has been washed or blown away. And clutching jewels and artwork, they will stand and wail. Banking empires, government security blankets, all run by puppets of the puppet master, will receive demands to do something to return the comfortable class to their comfort. Simultaneous demands on nervous and malfunctioning puppets creates an explosive situation, more malfunction, wailing all around. End of the continuing quote from Zeta Talk, Clash of Agendas. One might equate the comfortable class with what Pink Floyd called the pigs on his album Animals. He is describing those who belly up to the trough and fake concern for those less fortunate.
Pink, man, pink, man. You are.
Quoting again from Zeta Talk, the working class. At the base of the pyramid, the working man and woman observe the drama. From their standpoint, they are living in the land of Oz, where nothing is as it has been pronounced. The good guys doing the bad deeds, and the economic recovery putting them out of their homes and jobs. The point of working for the comfortable class is for food and a roof over one's head, and when both seem tenuous, loyalty fails. The working class is thus simply not where expected to be, not the drones and robots anticipated, and the comfortable class now switches from simply wailing to panic. Insecurity translates to autocracy, so strong-arm tactics against the working class are the first armament. This, of course, backfires when cities are collapsing and the leadership proven inept, so the working class becomes the rebelling class and is absent even more. End of the continuing quote from Zeta Talk, Clash of Agendas. One might equate the working class with what Pink Floyd calls the sheep on his album Animals. He is describing those people who are naive, unaware of the dangers the dogs in the world bring to them. If the puppet masters are described as those with great wealth, there seems to be a connection to the Illuminati as described by Fritz Springmeier, and I quote, "These are oligarchical families that are extremely powerful bloodlines. One of these bloodlines includes all of your royal families in Europe. They are people that have been in control. Top bloodlines are the Astors, Bundy, Collins, DuPont, Fremont, Kennedy, Lay, Onassis, Rockefellers, Rothschild, Russell. Prince Charles is related to our presidents Washington, Jefferson, Madison, both of the Harrisons, Tyler, Taylor, and George Bush. Bush's vice president, Dan Quayle, was also related to the royal family. There are a lot of groups around the world that are making decisions that are controlling things from behind the scenes, and these particular groups are fronts for the Illuminati. Not fronts in the sense that they have no actual purpose, they serve a purpose, but there is a hidden level of control back behind them." End of the quote from Fritz Springmeier, author of books on the Illuminati. The Zetas agree that such a group exists, operates behind the scenes, and gives the goal or mission of the Illuminati to be a fear campaign. And I quote, "Their symbol, the single eye, is discovered so frequently that interest is raised rather than suppressed. This is exactly what the Illuminati want, as they want the populace to feel manipulated, hopeless, left out of the loop, and that others more special and privileged are in control, in the know, and able to manipulate events in their favor. The eye, a symbol taken from ancient times so as to imply an age-old organization, carries the implication of being all-seeing, never blinking, and thus all-knowing. This was a well-thought-out fear campaign, with the moves in the game being played exactly as planned." End of the quote, Zeta Talk, Illuminati, written November 15, 1996. Are the Illuminati, in fact, puppet masters? If so, why have the Zetas chosen to call them puppet masters rather than by the more commonly recognized name, Illuminati? I quote again from Zeta Talk, written on the Illuminati. "Since we have described those who manipulate world events based on their great wealth as the puppet masters, does this mean the puppet masters are the Illuminati? No, though the Illuminati virtually worships the puppet masters, desires to be associated with this clout and influence, and thus often are used to further the puppet masters' goals. The Illuminati are an old society, centuries old, and emerging in Europe naturally were composed of royalty, members of court in attendance to royalty, and organized religion, which in those days were so often closely allied with royalty as state religions, to be one and the same. Do the royalty of Europe run the world? Do the heads of organized religions, the Vatican, run the world? On what basis? It is wealth that runs the world, by many means we have outlined, from purchasing cooperation from corporations, which they own, to assisting their puppets into political power via their control of the media and assets to be used for bribery and coercion. The members of the Illuminati seeks favor from the puppet master and offers services, and in this regard act as a supplicant, not a master." End of quote from addition to Zeta Talk, Illuminati. Are the Bilderbergers, Council of Foreign Relations, and Freemasons part of the Illuminati? And what of those who attend the annual Bohemian Grove affair? They may be visible, but not powerful, per the Zetas. Their function is control of information on the alien presence and the approach of Planet X. And I quote from Zeta Talk, Bilderbergers. "It is not hard to imagine the state of affairs after Roswell. The heads of state of U.S. allies and their close confidants, chairmen of major U.S. or international companies and their confidants, and a number of scientists from prestigious universities or institutes were aware of the alien presence, but were unsure what this meant for the future of the Earth. The original group was tasked with sorting out the issues and coming forth with recommendations, and the mission is not yet accomplished. Like most committees that cannot come up with an action plan, the only thing they accomplish is their self-perpetuation. End of the quote from Zeta Talk Bilderberg Group, written November 15, 1996. And I quote from Zeta Talk on the Council of Foreign Relations. Sought to influence nations to cooperate by maintaining control over U.S. foreign relations, U.S. dollars to be invested, trade agreements, the placement of military bases, all could be used as leverage. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Council of Foreign Relations, written November 15, 1996. And finally, I quote from Zeta Talk on the Masons. Membership in the Masons is often mentioned in association with secret societies holding special knowledge about the alien presence or alien technology. The reason for this association is somewhat natural, given the structure and operation of the Masons. Rigid rules, endless hierarchies, and privileges withheld from all but the elite members. This predominance works its way into NASA and the Apollo program, as individuals selected for key posts were chosen based on their long-standing habit of following nonsensical rules. Those at the top wanted complete control, and only virtual automatrons, such as the devout Masons often are, were trusted. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, Masons, written also on December 15, 1996. So, membership in the Masons merely indicates the individual will follow silly hierarchical rules. I quite believe that about silly hierarchical rules. I was able to watch a Masonic function once. I had an uncle who was a Mason and wanted his funeral service at the lodge. And these people were out there on the floor walking to the left and stopping and walking forward a few steps and stopping, then walking to the right a few steps, then stopping. Rules without any function. It was just silly. And the entire service seemed to be composed of people walking around, going through these motions, which seemed silly and without purpose. If the puppet master is controlling the world by his wealth, primarily, as the Zetas have recently stated, by diplomacy, rather than bribery or intimidation, although these tools are indeed used, how exactly does money control the world? I quote from Zeta Talk, "The wealthy own stock, large blocks, and through stock ownership often have influence on corporate holdings of stock. Thus, they influence corporate direction by threat of vote power as stockholders. The wealthy influence corporate direction. Their lackeys are the CEOs who control what the public can buy, what jobs are available, and what the public hears on the closely held media channels. In that the wealthy want corporate heads to be their lackeys, they interview them, and thus these individuals are known to them. The wealthy also fund political campaigns, bribe, pay for smear campaigns against political enemies, and assassination of those not cooperating if necessary. Thus they influence government direction through bribery, support, or intimidation. The politically powerful are known to the wealthy who put them in office. If the wealthy did not have a hand in elections, in those countries not holding elections, the wealthy soon have a relationship to those in power by engaging in bargaining. A country has resources, labor, or is strategically located, and under the guise of corporate interests, the arm of the wealthy reaches in to strike a bargain. The banking establishment has a natural relationship to the wealthy as they manage the wealth. Wealthy individuals are well known to the banking establishment, who pander to these clients above all others. Bribery of the politically powerful often involves covert movement of funds to evade detection, and here the banking industry is the link between the wealthy and those they would buy." End of quote from Zeta Talk on the Elite, written June 11, 2003. What do the wealthy, those controlling enough immense wealth that they essentially control the world, fear as the world spins into chaos and devastation, earthquakes and collapsing cities and drought-stricken fields around the world during the approach of Planet X? I quote from Zeta Talk, "We have mentioned that the establishment fears losing their perch on top of the pile and being reduced to the stature of the common man. They fear primarily, one, a sudden panic in the masses to the extent they leave their jobs and the infrastructure collapses as maintenance is not done on power grids or water mains, and security over corporate assets is not maintained. 2. Opportunistic looting, which catches like wildfire when it becomes apparent that security is lacking. The police or private security forces distracted by their own panic. 3. Military sent in to quell riots becoming brutal, as they have frankly been trained, creating in the populace a rebellion beyond panic that sets the common man against the establishment. A class war is seething under the surface, boiling and not settling. 4. Stock markets collapsing under sudden sell orders in an effort to liquidate cash, and banks unable to meet the demands that bonds and savings accounts be liquidated. So the financial system is no longer considered functional, and squatters' rights begins to prevail as the mindset of the masses. 5. Military units or militias becoming breakaway units, such that rogue states are formed, the world in the main becoming a no-man's land, where the safety of elite cannot be assumed or assured. 6. The wealthy elite, and those in power when the big lies are exposed, becoming targets of those who have long resented them, with more than focused looting and retaliation unleashed as starving masses of the humanity become organized. And 7. The power of the elite no longer recognized when it is reduced to paper ownership no longer enforced by the courts, and control over police and military forces no longer listening, and consisting of paper money no longer having any value in a barter-driven economy. This was a quote from Zeta Talk, What They Fear, written September 7, 2004. Ownership, in fact, being something merely recorded on paper, and money, in fact, being merely a piece of paper, a bond or stock certificate, and the value of what stands behind that money ephemeral, as things can be destroyed, except for land, perhaps. But land can become useless if it goes under the waves or cropland becomes a desert. What the wealthy have in hand, in essence, is a paper promise. Debts are promised to be paid. Government bonds are promised not to default. Banks promise to keep your savings safe. I quote from Zeta Talk, The Paper Promise. The banking system or any paper money system is built on confidence. Confidence that notes will be paid out in something solid, something other than a paper promise, which is what all money systems and banknotes are. Centuries past, when the world was operating primarily on the barter system, such promises were few and were backed by gold or silver or land, or a herd of horses or cows, something solid. Villages and towns, farmers and those in the trades, all operated primarily by barter. A cabinet built by a carpenter in payment in a quarter of a slaughtered hog, a bushel of apples getting a tooth pulled by a dentist. Financial sophistication developed slowly, based on the growing confidence that the bank backer of a money system, a paper promise, could be counted on to deliver something solid. Thus it was, until recently, that gold was considered the backing. When the press to use paper money to support a debtor economy ran beyond the supply of gold, the money systems were taken off the gold standard. In the past, a creditor could put his house and property up as backing for a loan, his herd, perhaps even his pending harvest of wheat, but could not get credit unless he had something solid as collateral. But today it is the norm for every person, without substance to his name, to have access to credit cards that allow him to go into debt beyond his ability to repay. The creditor is given credit on the assumption that he will repay. The funds he has loaned are assumed to have worth, and all pass paper promises around as though these were based on things that could be brought forth upon demand. As can be seen when whole countries default on the paper money they float out under their flag, the value of a dollar can collapse quickly. Argentina is a case in point, the money becoming worthless almost overnight. In days past, when banks and paper money were closely tied to things, such a panic would result in the banks who had loaned money to farmers demanding payment in things, and any who deposited savings in the banks demanding payment in things, so that at the end of the shuffle, those having made savings deposits would find themselves with a herd of cattle or some acreage rather than paper money. When money became unhinged from solid backing, speculation crept in, resulting in inflated stocks, loans without collateral, a pyramid scheme that is a house of cards that would collapse with few left after the shuffle, with anything solid in their hands. Most would be left holding worthless notes, uncollectible, standing atop a deep pile of bankruptcies. During the Great Depression, it was no secret that banks were in default, farmers and corporations bankrupt, but this was ignored as demanding payment that could not be produced would only put properties and empty buildings in the hands of banks who could not sell them as the market was dead. So a bankrupt status was ignored, and all floated along until life came back into the system and payments began to be made again. Extension after extension made. This is what is occurring today among countries and creditors and banking entities to avoid a breach of confidence that would start a panic in the world at large. Say nothing. Make no demands for payment in things. Give extension after extension, and the house of cards, built on paper promises, stands. This assumes cooperation among all parties, and where this is holding today, as it did during the Great Depression, there is a difference. During the Great Depression, the world was not beset with natural disasters after natural disaster, as is starting to occur today. Commerce, trade, was reduced due to lack of confidence, but at the base, the economies were solid and recovery followed renewed confidence. Today, all countries are in a crisis affecting their base economies. We mentioned that crop failure would follow the irregular weather, and it did. But buildings collapsing in earthquakes, trains running off suddenly twisted tracks, factories exploding as gas lines breach, and storms tearing at coastlines without remorse do more than represent an opportunity to rebuild. They represent insurance companies unable to pay for rebuilding, factories laying off workers unable to function, and distribution of goods blocked. In other words, paralysis, rather than a fever of economic activity, results. When those at the top of the financial pile, or those whom they can command, see the structure starting to become a pile of bankruptcies likely to tie up their ability to reach down and grab a thing so they will not be left with worthless paper promises, all want to move first in order to get a thing before the other financial giants beat them to it. They are holding notes. And at the base, these notes translate to land, buildings, inventories, oil deposits, ships, food stocks, herds, and virtual slavery of those who cannot pay but need to eat and have shelter. Indentured servitude returned. We have mentioned that the pending pole shift has resulted in leveling wars between the puppet masters and their restless puppets seeking to become opportunists during times when their masters might be unable to retain control. These wars will result in lack of cooperation between creditor countries and corporations and those who own them cracking. Fail to cooperate and I'll call your notes due, and while you struggle under a rain of failures, I will pluck what I wish from the pool and emerge owning you once again, but with you wasted and discredited. That is the threat. Thus, where banks default because those they have already loaned money to are going into bankruptcies, and where at base this is due to collapsing economies struggling with the effort and effect of the current earth changes, natural disasters, there is also the element of warfare among the puppet masters and their puppets. To the extent that the rebellious puppets are the political power in a country, that country may find itself fiscally undermined and corruption within that power structure exposed. To the extent that the rebellious puppets are corporate heads, those corporate heads will find themselves unable to get the loans they need to continue and forced into bankruptcy court. To the extent that a puppet master, and there are many, senses that the enemy is another puppet master, the property holdings of that master will be undermined, whether this includes a country, a corporation, or financial holdings such as bonds. Watch closely during this war of the titans in the financial realm, and you will see the swords flash and parry. This was quoted from Zeta Talk, Paper Promise, written September 17, 2004. If the paper promise will likely not survive into life after the pole shift, what commodity is likely to emerge as the new gold? As should be evident from the way oil fields were being invaded going into 2003, when Planet X was seen roaring into the inner solar system by NASA and JPL, and the elite were aware of this, they figure it will be black gold, oil. I quote from Zeta Talk. The oil fields in Alaska were considered in hand. Venezuela, an easy step when the time came by removing the embattled president. defenseless Saudi, a simple matter of stepping sideways from an Iraq stronghold, the fields north of Norway virtually undefended, pipelines into the fields north of Pakistan already guarded, and Nigeria on the plate for an easy snatch by suggesting U.S. assistance with unrest. Thus, in order to have a stranglehold on survivors in the aftertime, to have complete control of the future currency, oil, the move into Iraq was necessary, and the war proceeded on schedule. What has happened during the delay? The U.S. military, pushed into Iraq against their advice and assigned like robots to move into Nigeria, rebelled and no longer can be counted on to follow orders from the White House. Public opinion on the need to invade Iraq has eroded, as a smoking gun, evidence of weapons of mass destruction, were not found in Iraq, and thus control of all the oil fields is at risk. Seems lost, as the U.S. military was the anchor in the grand plan, and they have bolted. This was a quote from Zeta Talk, The Slipping Grip, written October 19, 2003. Under the current setup where the paper promise rules, how do the wealthy maintain their stock markets and prevent banks from failing? Economies around the world are struggling. In fact, it's more like a global depression than a global recession, although this is denied by the media. Can a stock market such as the Dow be artificially maintained? How many have heard of the plunge protection team? Listen to this quote from Financial Sense. Program trading in an utterly concentrated stock market pretty much guarantees the possibility of systematic and continual market rigging. It's known as the plunge protection team. Executive Order 12631 specifically authorizes them to coordinate buying. There is even a potentially unlimited source of money to do this pumping. Federal government contractors operate under a special law. Should the pension funds of the federal government contractors lose money in their investments to the degree that they fall below minimum reserve requirements imposed by other federal laws, they can simply make up the difference by adding it as a pro rata to subsequent items sold to the federal government. End of the first quote from Financial Sense. Now, this was written April 3rd, 2005. Going back to a quote from the Financial Sense website, written November 20th, 2004, and I quote, "In the spring of 2003, Ken Petelos, an analyst at the Pentagon Department, intended to control program costs at federal contractors, was startled to find that the overhead costs of virtually every airplane that Lockheed Martin sold to the U.S. Air Force would soon be skyrocketing in price. The C-130J transport would go up from $1.193 billion in 2003 to $8.352 billion by 2006. The F-16 program would jump from $3.49 billion in 2004 to $6.66 billion in 2005 and then on to $14.84 billion in 2006. End of the quote from Financial Sense website, dated November 20th, 2004. This is not an inflationary rate. You don't go from $3.49 billion to $14.84 billion in a mere 2 years because of inflation, because that's a rate. How many hundreds of percent is that rate? What they're doing here is pumping the Dow from money allocated to the Department of Defense for the Iraq war. All those billions, which seem unaccounted for, are going to a high-priced good bought from military-industrial contractors who then play the stock market, buying and buying worthless stock to run the price up, and this is not a free market. This is being maintained. Why would a country go to such means to maintain a false face to the world while claiming that there's a free market economy if the truth is something quite different? Since Bush took office in the year 2000, the dollar has plunged to less than half its worth around the world. Foreign countries are buying U.S. bonds, but are faced with the bond being worth less when they cash it in than when they bought it. A losing endeavor. That's not an investment. That's giving money away. And these foreign countries, mostly Asian countries like China and Japan, Korea, are threatening to rebel. In the words of the Zetas, and I quote, "The print-to-spend cycle, an inflationary trend, discourages bond sales as the bonds lose value during their life. Not surprisingly, the U.S. finds the value of the dollar at less than half what it was only a few short years ago before Bush took office, and the bonds they issue increasingly ignored by foreign investors. Most stocks are controlled by money managers who are under contract to pension funds or private individuals' savings for retirement. If all sell orders are held until buy orders at that price are located, and these managers buy and sell from each other, the price is controlled. Low volume and these types of controls, which are illegal but not new to Wall Street, maintain the price. End of this quote from Zeta Talk, Market Freefall, written June 19, 2004. What they're describing here is the method by which the Dow is maintained. You don't sell until you have the buyer lined up. And the buyer, of course, is a military-industrial complex pension fund who is investing as directed, because should they lose any money by these investments, they'll be compensated by being allowed to hike the price of their next product sold to the Department of Defense. That's how it's done. Well, what if this doesn't work? What if bank failure and crashing stock markets and the dropping value of corporations and that have their infrastructure devastated by the increasing earth changes, loss of markets as a worldwide recession starts to bite, nobody has any buying power around the world? That's kind of a worry. Is martial law likely to be imposed to protect the wealthy, to protect the wealth, price freezes, the like? After all, he who runs the world could order his puppets to impose martial law, it would seem. I quote from Zeta Talk, what they fear. Well-timed martial law would supplant what the elite fear with a controlled setting where, one, travel would be prevented and jobs attended to by force, with workers returned to their jobs by gunpoint if necessary. Thus, the power and water utilities would work and food distribution would continue. Two, looting would be reduced greatly by curfews and travel restrictions, and the wildfire effect would never ignite. Three, brutal military techniques would not incite rebellion, as torture would occur behind doors, not in the streets, and the organization needed to incite rebellion unable to occur due to curfew and travel restrictions and selective arrests of likely suspects. Four, access to stock markets and banking would be controlled so that the system never reaches collapse due to liquidation demands it cannot meet, and the populace feels they must continue to honor their bills and obligations as the monster lives and has not died. Five, spearhead from central commands, martial law instituted to encompass all possible militia units, would prevent breakaway by exposing such maneuvers. A unit on its own cannot break away. A unit required to check in and coordinate with others finds this option exposed and thus inhibited. Six, the infrastructure of power and water utilities intact and supporting an intact financial system, the political and thus the legal system is likely to prevail and not collapse, and thus fear of the courts could be used to prevent retaliatory acts against the wealthy elite. And seven, the status quo continues. Paper money and deeds and stock ownership of corporations still has the strong arm of the law behind it, and the common man sees the fist above them uneroded and continues to walk in the ruts of their workaday world despite new dangers such as earthquakes and a tottering and wobbling earth. End of the quote from Zeta Talk, What They Fear, written September 7, 2004. But for martial law to succeed, a firm date is needed once again. And thus the reason all valid prophecy, including Zeta Talk, refuses to put a date on the end times going into the pole shift. For martial law to succeed at all, there must be a problem extreme enough to be recognized as a rationale for extreme protection, such as a continent rent in two by an earthquake, a tidal wave tearing away at the cities along a coastline, or a wave of disease threatening to wipe out the country if not controlled by quarantine. And this threat must be real, else support for the strong arm of martial law would not be in place and erosion would occur quickly. End quote. Well, what happened in April of 2005? There was a release of the same flu virus that caused a pandemic in 1957 to 4,000 labs around the world. This virus was released from a lab within the United States, and everyone threw up their hands and said, "We're at a loss as to how this happened." It was included in a batch of flu strains that were to be tested. Like if you find a dead bird and you're trying to examine and say, well, what virus killed this bird? You can say, is it a known virus or is it a new virus, etc. And so it was in that databank. But nevertheless, this live virus was sent to 4,000 labs around the world in the mail. And some of those mail packets actually got lost in Mexico. They had to scurry around and found them in a FedEx place just sort of thrown in the corner. Well, isn't this a way of starting a pandemic? There's no resistance to this. There's no flu vaccine for this 1957 virus, nor is there any body of immunity in the populace. Who's trying to cause a pandemic here? And I quote from ABC News, April 14th, 2005, "Feds at a loss at how flu strain got to labs." And I quote, "Federal officers are still at a loss to explain how a potentially deadly strain of influenza could be sent to more than 4,000 labs around the world. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is operating under the presumption that the H2N2 strain was purposefully included in the panels designed to test the lab's proficiency in identifying viruses." End quote. Purposefully included. Somebody deliberately decided to release a 1957 pandemic virus carelessly in the mail and hoping for a disaster. If martial law requires a firm date or a pandemic, there are other means by which this crowd can achieve their ends, that being to trap people in coastal or river basin cities, poison them, drown them, etc. There were a couple of incidences that happened late March 2004 that were so close together as to be almost simultaneous, conspiratorially speaking. The first occurred on March 25th, the second on March 30th. Both raised the short hairs at the back of my neck, and I was not alone. The first occurred in Bridgeport, Connecticut on I-95, and I quote from a news report. "An oil tanker truck crashed on Interstate 95 Thursday night and started a fire that burned out of control, possibly destroying bridges in both directions on the heavily used highway between New York and Boston. The highway may be closed for days or weeks because of the damage. I-95 is a vital artery connecting the New York area, Connecticut, and the rest of New England." End quote. This was at first treated as a terror threat. That's the way it first was presented in the news. And I quote, "A terror threat targets Connecticut's busiest stretch of highway, the Interstate 95 corridor in Bridgeport. State police began stepping up security in the area Thursday. The response is a coordinated effort between local and state police, the Coast Guard, and Homeland Security." End quote. Well, was it a terror attack? Apparently not. No arrests were made. The conclusion, just an accident. But the truck exploded with a fire hotter than any fuel that he could have been carrying, according to much discussion on the internet. And, despite that explosion, the driver walked away from the blast unharmed. I-95 also got a double whammy that day, blocked by yet another point near Richmond. And I quote the Richmond Times-Dispatch, "A raging fire broke out at 12:32 p.m. today in a building under construction for Virginia Commonwealth University and ignited other blazes blocks away, sending soccer ball-sized cinders tumbling down city streets and the interstate and filling the sky with smoke. The fires affected an area bounded by Interstate 95 on the north, and witnesses reported hearing two or three explosions before the fire." End quote. Were these a deliberate attempt to immolate the public? Martial law by another face, a test? What Zeta Talk thought, and I quote, from Zeta Talk blockade test. "The Homeland Security threat levels were, as many have suspected, not laid out with terrorism in mind, but the coming catastrophes preceding rotation stoppage and the pole shift. The plan was to entrap tens of millions within the U.S. or in coastal or river basin cities and force them to drown. If they can't just call out an increased terror threat at will, And with the excuse of chatter on the airwaves, perhaps they can simulate travel blocks under this guise. The test would measure, 1, the degree of travel disruption, 2, the alternate routes taken by those needing to travel, 3, the degree of panic or anger such a blockage would cause, 4, how quickly local crews reacting to and cleaned up the disaster, 5, whether the public suspected terrorism at the core or looked elsewhere for a cause. The results of this test were a failure for the following reasons. 1, the public flowed around the blockage like water around a pebble in its path. 2, alternate routes increased as the need arose. Endless innovation by the public where it was hoped they would be habit-prone and rigid, refusing to try other routes. 3, the public was calm and were spontaneously helpful to one another. 4, local crews were annoyingly efficient in putting out fires and setting up alternate routes for commuters. 5, the public did not suspect terrorism, despite the alert which preceded the fires, and those who have long suspected the U.S. government of trying to fake it became more convinced this was the case. End quote. Zeta Talk, Blockade Test, written March 27, 2004. Then on March 30, 2004, another opportunity presented with an exploding refinery at Texas City near Houston. This time, instead of a blockade test, we had a shelter-in-place test that was done, with the residents told to stay in their homes as the refinery exploded right next door. What fool would do that? Per the Houston News, and I quote, "An explosion at the BP Amoco Chemical Plant in Texas City, located at FM 519 East Tuesday evening, had residents being told not to leave their homes. A shelter-in-place was in effect for Texas City and La Marquise, but has since been lifted. The cause of the explosion is not yet known." End quote. Well, who would stay next door to an exploding refinery when you could zip away? Here's what the Zetas had to say about that, and I quote from Zeta Talk, Shelter-in-Place Test. "We have mentioned that the duct tape and plastic sheeting suggestion, made early on by Homeland Security and defended as logical by the Bush administration as a means of protecting against noxious gas attacks, was a test. The notion that in homes where cracks and air leaks abound, that such a rig would protect against poisonous gas is nonsense. Homes have ventilation systems, which were not addressed. And if a bug can crawl about between the walls into a room, air can likewise move. Thus, this was a gullibility test, considered a failure, based on the resulting sales of duct tape. But it was argued that the test was a poor setup. No immediate danger existed to prompt such purchases. Duct tape and plastic sheeting are also products in stock in many homes, thus sales a poor measure. A second test was needed to determine how gullible and likely to follow Homeland Security advice the public would be. Local communities were advised to issue a shelter-in-place order and to monitor the traffic closely to determine compliance. This test has all the aspects not in the duct tape test, as an exploding refinery is an immediate danger. Roads in the flatlands of Texas easily visible from the air and even from tall buildings, and the urge of those with any sense of self-preservation would be to vacate, at least temporarily. Prior statistics on the degree of compliance with orders to leave the areas when hurricanes were about to slam the coast were also available for comparison. Once again, the reaction of people was considered to be a null for the test. Those who in the past rushed to leave during hurricane warnings did so again. Those who in the past stayed in place, either because they were unable to leave or simply stubborn and even perhaps wishing to die, did so during the refinery explosion. No change. Thus, no one paid attention to the shelter-in-place directive. The public has a deep distrust of the motives of the Bush administration and Homeland Security, and that is what this test proved." End of quote from Zeta Talk, Shelter-in-Place Test, written March 31, 2004. If a blockade or shelter-in-place test failed, what to do? Well, those who hoped to be able to escape to their bunkers, the elite, well-stocked bunkers, paid for, I might add, by taxpayer money, still want to be able to keep the roadways clear for their dash to safety and eliminate as many useless eaters in coastal and river basin cities as they can. So the one route open to them is to squelch all word of Planet X in the media. Here's what Zeta Talks has to say about that, and I quote from Zeta Talk, Muzzling the Media. The wealthy elite and those in political control of governments have an advantage in knowing and can shelter their wealthy and ensure their control in the aftertime. Whether at gunpoint or by virtue of food stores that the starving will be desperate for, land, oil reserves, and healthy slaves willing to work for food are commodities upon which kingship in the aftertime is to be built. This is the plan, as we have repeatedly stated. What will cause this plan to fail is the lack of certain timing on events, as martial law, called too early, is revealing, and called too late is ineffectual. Existing political structures are not presumed to survive, except perhaps at the local level. Thus, no need for national politicians, considered puppets by these puppet masters, to be considered assets of value, especially if they are broadly distrusted or despised by their public. The puppet masters can rely on their vast wealth to prepare for this time, stocking supplies and preparing to recover faster from the effects of a pole shift than any politically driven network could recover. The puppet master is an octopus with unbroken tentacles. Political control of government and employees or networks or assets is an octopus put through a meat grinder, in effect. The puppet master wins. In this setting, it is the puppets who will terrorize those about to leak news of the cover-up. Because the puppets have the most to lose, terrified of this precipitous drop and hoping for a different outcome, they are resisting a breakdown in the cover-up. And this was a quote from Zeta Talk, Muzzling the Media, written December 2nd, 2004. Well, media suppression is arranged, as is suppression of talk from scientists who invariably work from NASA or JPL or the universities, and that includes observatories. These are all heavily reliant on government grants, and often individuals can't work in these settings unless they take a national security oath. Do not talk about this. It will cause panic, and that is a national security issue. Well, we have national security blanket dropping on anything embarrassing to those in the White House. So why would they hesitate at the approach of a rogue planet about to pass? I'm sure that the explanation given is, hey, it'll pass, and there may not be that much damage, and so we don't want to cause panic and all the deaths that would occur from people running, screaming in the streets. In fact, NASA even held a conference, and among those attending, they decided if there was going to be like an extinction-level event or something where huge death would occur, possibly life snuffed out on the planet, should they or should they not tell the public about this, and they decided not to. So it's already of record that that would be their decision. So, no, you know, the panic is the enemy. Don't tell anybody. Doesn't matter if those within NASA and those who know are not panicking and running in the streets. They presume the public would, because that is quite convenient for them. In to keep the cover-up going so that they can stock their bunkers, they can have their bunkers, and the roadways won't be crowded when it's time to dash to their bunkers. That's not the reason that they're not telling you. They just don't want your messy panic. But eventually, the truth will out. And I quote from Zeta Talk, cover-up cracks. Cover-ups meet their demise based on several factors, which vary depending upon the scope or longevity of the cover-up, how many people need to know, the demonstrable evidence that can be used to counter the lie, and the ability to hide or destroy such evidence, and the benefit to those in the know of maintaining versus exposing the cover-up. First, how many people need to know? Where at first the cover-up of Planet X entailed NASA employees who routinely take a national security oath and key employees of major observatories who likewise are required to take this oath, when Planet X announced its presence with red dust, a blazing double sun, and an obviously erratic moon orbit, this group decided to include media spokespersons, newspaper editors, and staff members at observatories and scientific centers assigned to answer public inquiries. A mob. Second, what demonstrable evidence exists that can be used to counter the lie? The big lie that Planet X does not exist is being countered primarily by the red dust in the Earth's atmosphere, dusting the ground and creating blood-red sunsets and moons, unexplained by any excuse that the sun is undergoing an extreme solar cycle. The big lie is also being countered by weather extremes without explanation, earthquake increases causing tremors in places not used to any quakes. Third, can the cover-up hide or destroy such evidence? To the extent that control lies in the hands of those perpetuating the cover-up, such as SOHO images, Hubble images, Navy master clock manipulation, and statements issued by scientists employed by the government or universities or major corporations, such evidence will be countered but not destroyed. Fourth, what are the benefits to those in the know of maintaining versus exposing the cover-up? Clearly, the establishment in the know about the coming cataclysms stands to benefit from a continuing cover-up. Public knowledge would cause their empires to collapse, banking failures, a stock market crash, corporations devoid of workers, security workers vacant from their posts, crowded highways, looted stores, and an infrastructure no longer there to support the elite high in their purchase above the common man. Well, what will the reaction of the elite, those who directed the cover-up from the start, be to a cracked cover-up? They will retreat to their enclaves, to their bunkers, surrounded by the military whom they assume will remain loyal, or by well-paid mercenaries, leaving the phone lines dead, the offices and swank homes vacant, no explanation, and no one home, and no one in charge. Quote from Zeta Talk on Cover-Up Cracks, written July 5, 2003. Well, if martial law can't be imposed because, frankly, a firm date is not known, if they knew, for instance, just when 3 days of darkness or 6 days of sunrise west and slowing to a rotation stoppage and 6 days of stoppage and then boom, a terrible pole shift, if they knew when this was going to ensue, they could establish martial law and it would hold, but they don't have the date, which leaves the wealthy elite on the same footing as the common man, facing the pole shift with uncertainty. It would seem that money would be an advantage in this setting, but the opposite is the case. The elite have no place to run. And I quote from Zeta Talk, no place to run. Off-Earth bunkers are feasible only on the dark side of the moon, and that even these are uncertain, they would be returned to Earth safely, given the devastation that all shuttles are likely to suffer during the bombardment of debris in the tail of Planet X during this passage. This option is making all nervous. Can't run there. Bunkers on Earth, established decades ago in the mountains of the Urals, Appalachia, the Alps, and even in low-lying areas such as Houston, Moscow, Western Australia, and Rome, have become known and in many cases widely known to the general public. Can run there, but can't hide. Emerging from bunkers, well-stocked and defended by the military controlled by the elite, to become kings in the aftertime. Well, that was the plan. But this requires control of the U.S. military, and this has lately been lost. The point of taking over the White House by voter fraud and the unconstitutional entry of the Supreme Court of the United States into the state of Florida's recount matter in the year 2000 was to control the U.S. military, which has recently bolted. Hiding in bunkers is distinctly distasteful if emerging will find one facing angry farmers with pitchforks. Can run, can't hide, and most certainly can't emerge. This is the end of the quote from Zeta Talk, No Place to Run, written November 18, 2003. That concludes our broadcast. Thank you for being with us. Remember to carry love in your heart. It's the commodity of the future. As the Zetas say, love may have a blooming going into the shift, as it ought, those with great love in their hearts responding to the realization that little else matters.